Beware of fraudulent copies of this and other media products. Genuine products are always wrapped in a seal and bear the Halakha Media mark. Fraudulent copies destroy future productions. Help us to help you. Buy a genuine product.
Open your mind.
Halakha Media, the signature of quality and expression.
Quality and expression.
Pioneering production. Thrilling Dolby Pro Logic surround sound.
Innovative.
Captivating. Compelling audio range.
Open your mind.
Open your mind.
Open your mind.
Visit www.halakha.com for more information.
Signature of quality and expression. Quality and expression.
Big idea. A new world order.
You have to understand the difference. We didn't come over on the Nina, the Pinta, and the Whatchamacallit. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Landed right on top of us.
Where's outcry? Why? You can get all the film and the footage of all the carnage in Los Angeles, but you can show me no footage of any damage in Iraq. And all you show me is some surgical strike. Now, 1 year later, it comes out that these so-called surgical strikes were mixed in.
The 20th century, in hindsight, was a century of war and conflict. A century of people supporting conflicting ideas, who drowned mankind in pain and blood in the name of tyrannical ideologies. Millions of people were killed, massacred, abandoned to hunger and death, and left without shelter, protection, or support in the name of serving deviant ideologies. Millions more were left exposed to inhuman treatment. Almost every time there were the signatures of dictators beneath all the suffering and disasters. Stalin, Lenin, Trotsky, Mao, Pol Pot, Hitler, Mussolini, Franco. While some of these names shared the same ideology, others were bitter enemies to the death. And from this rivalry, many societies were dragged into their conflict, turning brother against brother. Fascism and communism come at the top of these ideologies, which brought some of mankind's darkest days. These ideologies are seen as enemies of each other, but in fact, there lies an undiscovered truth here. These ideologies were nourished by one ideological source, drew strength and support from it. That source is Darwin's materialist philosophy. Darwinism emerged in the 19th century as the restating of a myth dating back to Sumeria and ancient Greece, and has since then formed the fundamental idea behind most of the ideologies that have been harmful to mankind. Darwinism has worn a so-called scientific mask. It thus allowed these ideologies and their supporters practical measures to win a false legitimacy. By means of this false legitimacy, the theory of evolution soon left the fields of knowledge of biology and paleontology and began to comment on fields from human relations to history and to influence fields from politics to social life. Because some particular claims of Darwinism supported the contemporary thought, which began to come into motion and take shape in the 19th century, it started to gain wide support from these circles. In particular, people began trying to apply the idea that there is a fight for survival among living creatures in nature, and as a result, the idea that the strong survive while the weak are defeated began to be applied to human thought and behavior. When Darwinism's claim that nature was a place of struggle and conflict began to be applied to human beings and societies, It gave birth to Hitler's deviation of building a master race. Marx's claim that the history of mankind is the history of class struggle, capitalism's provisioned for the strong growing even stronger at the expense of the weak. The inhuman colonization of the so-called third world countries by such imperialist nations as Britain all found some kind of justification. Robert Wright, the writer of the book The Moral Animal, summarizes the disasters that the theory of evolution has brought to the history of mankind in this way.
Evolutionary theory, after all, has a long and largely sordid history of application to human affairs. After being mingled with political philosophy around the turn of the century to form the vague ideology known as social Darwinism, it played into the hands of racists, fascists, and the most heartless sort of capitalists.
Before Darwin, almost 5,000 years ago, idol-worshipping religions had dominated in Mesopotamia. These idolatrous religions had produced some superstitions and myths regarding the roots of life and the universe. One of these was the belief in evolution. According to the Sumerian Enuma Elish epic, life had emerged spontaneously, without divine act. First in water, and then living species had physically evolved from one another. Later, the myth of evolution found more space to live in another idol-worshipping civilization, ancient Greece. Ancient Greek materialist philosophers counted matter as the only thing which existed. They turned to the myth of evolution, inherited from the Sumerians, to explain how living things came about. In this way, materialist philosophy and the myth of evolution came together in ancient Greece. From there, it was carried to the culture of Rome. These two concepts of idolatrous cultures were introduced to the modern world in the 20th century. Some European intellectuals who examined the ancient Greek sources adopted materialism. They all had one common feature. They were totally against the idea of religion, completely against the divine intention. In this environment, the first person to take the theory of evolution on in a detailed way was the French biologist Jean-Baptiste Lamarck. In his theory, which would later be understood to be false, Lamarck proposed that all living creatures evolved from one another by small changes throughout their lives. One person who repeated Lamarck's claims in a slightly different way was Charles Darwin. Darwin put forward his theory in his book, The Origin of Species, which he published in England in 1859. In his book, the myth of evolution, which had come down from ancient Sumeria, was put forward in some detail. He claimed that all species of living creatures came from one ancestor, born by chance in the water, and that they had grown different from one another by small changes which came about by coincidence. Darwin's claim was based on the apparent graduations of complexity between different animal groups. However, Darwin's theory did not win much general acceptance from the men of science of his time. Fossil experts in particular were aware that Darwin's claim was nothing but the product of a fantasy. The fossil record revealed that living organisms did not evolve from primitive to advanced species, as Darwin claimed. In the following years, other claims of the theory of evolution were refuted one after another. Biochemistry revealed that life is far too complex to have emerged by chance. The mathematical impossibility of the haphazard formation of the simplest protein molecule, let alone a cell, became evident. In the coming years, anatomy revealed that living things have a superior design and that they were created separately. Darwin's theory seriously lacked a scientific foundation. Yet the theory soon earned political support because with this theory, Darwin offered an extraordinary ideological foundation for the dominant powers of the 19th century. In 1871, Darwin published The Descent of Man, in which he outlined his theory on the origin of man, claiming that man and ape evolved from a common ancestor. Darwin showed no evidence whatsoever to support this claim, but merely produced some imaginary assumptions. Darwin also embraced an interesting thought. He asserted that some races were more evolved and therefore more advanced than others. Some races thus were almost still at the same level as apes. Darwin's theory had also a second important aspect. Darwin erected his theory on the foundation of the concept of struggle for life. According to him, a fierce struggle, a continuous dispute pervaded in nature. The strong always won against the weak, and thus ensured development. Darwin asserted that the same type of struggle also held true among human races. Even the subtitle in his book, The Origin of Species by Way of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life, explicitly reveals his racial views. According to Darwin, favored races were the European. Asian and African races had simply remained behind in this struggle for life. Darwin went further and suggested that these races would completely lose out in this struggle.
At some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races throughout the world. At the same time, the anthropomorphous apes will no doubt be exterminated, creating greater distance between man in a more civilized state.
Darwin was an explicit racist, believing in the superiority of the European over other races in the world. He believed that the European would first enslave and then eradicate these so-called inferior races over time. Indeed, Darwin's theories flourished, because just at that time, the Europeans were in search of a theory to legitimize their offenses. A 400-year horrid mass enslavement of millions of Africans and their descendants, a subhuman persecution of unimaginable cruelty. From the 16th century on, the European countries started to colonize different parts of the world. Later, the Spanish people invaded South America, enslaving the natives who inherently had a peaceful nature. The provinces of South America, which were rich in gold and silver, were plundered by these invaders, who forced natives to work for this end. Those natives who resisted were violently massacred. After the Spanish, the Portuguese, the Dutch, and then the British also took part in the competition of colonization. In the 19th century, Britain became the world's greatest empire of colonialism. From India to Latin America, the British Empire exploited the natural resources of an extensive geography. Of course, these countries didn't want to be remembered throughout history as plunderers, which is why they have sought for an explanation to justify their exploitation by labeling these exploited peoples as primitive men and even animal-like beings. Such assertions were first put forward during the early period of colonization, exactly at the same time when Christopher Columbus set sail for America. By claiming that the American natives were not real human beings, but a developed animal species, the Spanish colonizers sought to completely legitimize the enslavement of natives to suit their purpose. Nevertheless, the claims of colonists did not attract many advocates, since during this period, people in Europe widely believed that human beings were equally created by God, and that they all came from a common ancestor, the prophet Adam. However, beliefs changed in the 19th century as the materialist philosophy gained popularity, and people started to ignore the fact that God created human beings. The so-called scientific basis of racism was Darwin's theory of evolution. Indian anthropologist Lalita Vidyarthi states this fact.
Darwin's theory of the survival of the fittest was warmly welcomed by the social scientists of the day, and they believed mankind had achieved various levels of evolution, culminating in the white man's civilization. By the second half of the 19th century, racism was accepted as fact by the vast majority of Western scientists.
In 1912, a strange skull was found in Piltdown, England. Charles Dawson, the scientist who found the skull together with his team, declared that this skull belonged to a creature which was half ape, half human. Arthur Keith, the renowned evolutionist and anatomist, examined the fossil and confirmed the results. However, Dawson and Keith emphasized an important point. The brain of the fossil was as big as that of a modern man. The jawbone, however, had ape-like features. Suddenly, the brain of Piltdown man became a matter of pride for the British. Since this skull was found in England, it had to be the ancestor of the British people. According to the British scientists, the greater volume of the brain indicated that the British evolved before other races, and thus they were superior to other races. Newspapers ran headlines, and crowds joyously celebrated the discovery. The British government granted a knighthood to Arthur Keith for his famous discovery. The famous evolutionist, paleontologist Don Johansson, describes the relationship between the Piltdown fossil and English imperialism.
The Piltdown discovery was very Eurocentric. Not only did the brain have preeminence, but the English had preeminence.
The inspiration the English derived from Piltdown man lasted only until 1953. When Kenneth Oakley, a scientist who re-examined the fossil in detail, disclosed it as the greatest forgery of the 20th century. The fossil was produced by affixing an orangutan jaw to a human skull. London radio announced this fact with great astonishment.
Britain's Natural History Museum has been shaken over a scandal concerning the Piltdown man. One of the most famous fossil skulls in the world is declared to be in part of a hoax. 40 years ago, discovery was a sensation. Today comes the shocking news that this is skull.
The Piltdown man hoax was only a beginning for evolutionists. In the coming years, other new skulls were introduced as the ancestors of man. Yet in time, each one of these proved to be mere window dressing. It was realized that these skulls, which were displayed as pieces of evidence by evolutionists, belonged either to extinct ape species or ancient human races. The story of Piltdown man was only a symbolic indication of British racism deriving support from the theory of evolution. British imperialism actually found in Darwinism much more solid grounds to rely on. Colonization was not the only threat endorsed by Darwinism. The 20th century was also to witness the terrible alliance of Darwinism with Hitler. Nazism was born in a chaotic Germany, which emerged defeated from the First World War. The leader of the party was the angry and aggressive Adolf Hitler. Racism formed the basis of Hitler's worldview. Hitler believed that the so-called Aryan race, the fundamental element of the German nation, was superior to all the other races and had to rule them. He dreamed that the Aryan race would found a world empire that would last 1,000 years. The scientific support Hitler found for these racist theories was Darwin's theory of evolution. Hitler's most important idea molder was the racist German historian Heinrich von Treitschke, who was strongly affected by Darwin's theory of evolution. He used to say that nations can only develop by violent competition. While Hitler was developing his theories, he drew inspiration. The title of his famous book, Mein Kampf, My Fight, was a mere expression of the influence Darwin's struggle for life had made on Hitler. And just like Darwin, Hitler gave non-European races the status of monkeys and said that if the North European Germans were taken out of human history, nothing remains but a monkey dance. The evolutionist views of Nazis were grounded in eugenics. The theory of eugenics, which emerged in the first half of the 20th century, attracted many supporters. Eugenics in this period meant the weeding out of the sick and the handicapped and improving the human race by increasing the number of healthy individuals. As might be expected, those who put forward the eugenics program were Darwinists. At the head of the eugenics wave in England came Charles Darwin's son, Leonard Darwin, and his cousin, Francis Galton. It was clear that the idea of eugenics was a natural result of Darwinism.
Eugenics is man's taking charge of his own evolution.
In Germany, the first person to be influenced by and to spread eugenics was the famous evolutionary biologist Ernst Haeckel. Haeckel was a close friend and supporter of Darwin. To support the theory of evolution, he put forward the claim recapitulation, which proposed that the embryos of different living creatures resembled one another. It later emerged that Haeckel had falsified the data when putting forward this claim. He omitted some parts of embryos and made distortions on original drawings. Even Haeckel himself later confessed that his drawings were products of forgery. Yet, evolutionist circles turned a blind eye to all these forgeries to keep the theory alive. While Haeckel was on the one hand making scientific forgeries of this kind, on the other, he was putting forward eugenic propaganda. He suggested that newly born handicapped children should be killed forthwith. He went even further, claiming that lepers and people with cancer and mental illnesses should be painlessly killed, or else these people would be a burden on society and would slow down evolution. Haeckel died in 1919, but his ideas were inherited by the Nazis. Shortly after Hitler came to power, an official eugenics program was initiated. Hitler summed up the new policy in these sentences.
In the popular state, the education of the mind and the body will play an important role, but human selection is just as important. The state has the responsibility of declaring as unfit for reproductive purposes anyone who is obviously ill or genetically unsound, and must carry through with this responsibility ruthlessly without respect to understanding or lack of understanding on the part of anyone. Stopping reproduction of the bodily degenerate or physically ill for a period of only 600 years would lead to an improvement in human health which can hardly be envisaged today. If the fertility of the healthiest members of the race were realized and planned, the result would be a race which would have lost the seeds of bodily and spiritual decay which we now carry.
As a necessity of Hitler's policy, the mentally ill, the disabled, the blind from birth, and those with genetic diseases in German society were rounded up in special sterilization centers. These people were regarded as parasites, harmful to the purity and evolutionary progress of the German race. A while later, in fact, these people who were removed from society began to be killed by secret order. Under a law passed in 1933, 350,000 mentally ill people, 30,000 gypsies, and hundreds of black children were sterilized by such methods as castration, x-rays, and electric shocks to the genital area. One Nazi officer said,
"National socialism is nothing but applied biology."
By these pitiless methods against innocent people, Hitler, while continuing to fulfill the other requirements of eugenics, in an effort to speed up the so-called evolution of the German race, blonde, blue-eyed men and women accepted as representative of the German race were encouraged to form relationships. In 1935, special reproduction farms were established for this purpose. SS units frequently visited these farms, where young girls conforming to racist criteria were housed. The illegitimate children born on these farms were to be raised as the soldiers of the intended 1,000-year German kingdom. The Nazis again used Darwinist concepts to allegedly prove the superiority of the Aryan race. Darwin had proposed that as people evolved, so their skulls grew larger. The Nazis embraced this idea fiercely and set about taking skull measurements to show that the German race was superior. In all corners of Nazi Germany, comparisons were made showing that German skulls were larger than those of other races. Teeth, eyes, hair, and other features were evaluated with evolutionary measurements. Individuals found not to match up to German race measurements were to be exterminated in the name of the principles of eugenics. All this madness was carried out in the name of implementing Darwinist principles on society. The American historian Michael Garradin, author of the book The Nazi Doctors, said in his supposition,
"What happened was that there was a perfect match of Nazi ideology and social Darwinism and racial hygiene as it developed in the turn of the 20th century."
The American researcher George Stein wrote in one of his articles published in American Scientist magazine,
"National Socialism, whatever else it may have been, for example, a revolt of the petty bourgeoisie, was ultimately the first fully self-conscious attempt to organize a political community on a basis of explicit biopolicy."
The famous evolutionist Sir Arthur Keith comments on Hitler as follows.
"The German Führer, as I have consistently maintained, is an evolutionist. He has consciously sought to make the practice of Germany conform to the theory of evolution."
Hitler had a great hatred of divine religions. Moral virtues such as compassion, mercy, and humility, ordered by divine religions, represented a great obstacle to the ruthless and warrior Aryan type the Nazis wanted to create. For this reason, once the Nazis came to power in 1933, they tried to turn German society back to its old pagan beliefs. The swastika, a symbol from an old pagan culture, was a sign of this return. The Nazi ceremonies held in every corner of Germany were a return to the ancient pagan rites. The idea of evolution fitted in exceedingly well with the ideology, Nazism. In the same way that Hitler determined his policy by employing Darwinism, so his contemporary and ally Benito Mussolini made use of Darwinist claims and concepts to set Italy on imperialist and fascist foundations. In 1935, he occupied Ethiopia. He did not delay in backing and justifying his occupation of Ethiopia with Darwinism's racist views. According to Mussolini, the Ethiopians were inferior because they were of the black race, and being governed by a superior race like the Italians should have been an honor for them. Mussolini also thought that nations evolved by wars. For him, the reluctance of England to engage in war only proved the evolutionary decadence of the British Empire. The Nazi Empire lost the Second World War and went down in history as the murderer of millions of innocent people. Mussolini, on the other hand, was executed by his own people. Materialist philosophy, which was born in ancient Greece, enjoyed a victory in the 19th century, owing its success to the two German philosophers, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. They tried to explain the materialist philosophy in terms of a new method called dialectics. Dialectics was a belief that all development in the universe arose as the result of conflict. Based on this belief, Marx and Engels set about analyzing the history of the world. Marx claimed that the history of man was one of conflict, that the current conflict was one between workers and capitalists, and that the workers would soon rise up and build a communist revolution. The most striking feature of the two founders of communism was that, like all materialists, they nurtured a great hatred of religion. Marx and Engels were both confirmed atheists, and saw the doing away with religious beliefs as essential from the point of view of communism. At the time Marx and Engels formulated these thoughts, Darwin was proposing the evolution theory in his book, The Origin of Species, and putting forth the claim that living beings evolved through a continuous struggle for existence, namely through dialectics. Furthermore, it denied all religions and creation. This was an inestimable opportunity for Marx and Engels. Engels immediately read Darwin's book and wrote to Marx,
"Darwin, who I am just now reading, is splendid."
In response to him, Marx wrote,
"This is the book which contains the basis in natural history for our view."
Engels was so influenced by Darwin's theory that he wrote an article titled "The Role of Labor in the Passage from Monkey to Man." Later on, Engels compiled all his evolutionary ideas in the book Dialectics of Nature.